Ooh, you want to play psycho killer? Can I be the helpless victim?
Cross your eyes and scream, man. Scream for your life!
Welcome. I'm your scream queen, Jenica Olin. This is my 18th episode, and it's March, so that means spring break. Woo! That's not. That was kind of unenthusiastic. Sorry. My theme for the month is spring break slaughter. Lots of young people are trying to get it on, but forces beyond their control have different plans. If you're new here, each episode will have an intro, brief synopsis of the movie, an analysis of the film, and then I get into the true crime of it all, or more the true horrors of it all. I am a huge true crime fan, and I like to make connections between the true horrors that inspire our darkest imaginations. The truth is, the stuff on screen is way tamer than the true horrors that take place every day. Spoiler alert, I've made it my job to spoil the shit out of this movie. Today, I'll be covering The Cabin in the Woods, 2011 film, directed by Drew Goddard, written by Joss Whedon and Drew Goddard, starring Kristen Connolly, Chris Hemsworth, and Anna Hutchison. The estimated budget of this movie was $30 million, and the estimated growth was $70 million. So lots of money there. Some quick trivia about this film. The thermal coffee mug / bong was a full functional mug and bong as portrayed in the film, the prototype of which cost $5,000 to make. While Jules kisses the wolf head on the wall, the wolf's tongue is covered in powdered sugar to give it a dusty look and make this scene tolerable for Anna Hutchison. Writer Joss Whedon and director Drew Goddard created over 60 different types of monsters that were created specifically for The Cabin in the Woods. The Latin that Dana reads from the diary is dolor supervivo caro, dolor sublimis caro, dolor igneo animus, which means pain outlives the flesh, pain raises the flesh, pain ignites the spirit. Very creepy. This movie won 5 2012 Fright Meter Awards, including Best Horror Movie, Best Director, and Best Screenplay. Among the possible choices on the faculty's betting board are the following: werewolf, alien beast, mutants, wraiths, zombies, reptilius, clowns, witches, sexy witches, demons, hell lord, angry molesting tree, giant snake, deadites, mummy, the bride, the scarecrow folk, snowman, dragon bat, vampires, dismembered goblins, sugar plum fairy, merman, the reanimated, unicorn, Huron, Sasquatch, zombie redneck torture family, the doctors, jack-o'-lantern, giant twins, and Kevin. Let's set the scene with a synopsis of the movie.
Seriously believe nothing weird is going on.
We have a winner. It's the Buckners, ladies and gentlemen. The Buckners pull the W.
Let's get this party started.
Go.
Monsters? Magic?
You understand what's at stake.
Yes! Help me! Help me!
The movie opens with people working in some sort of laboratory and discussing an incident at the Stockholm facility. But the men are not worried because the facility in Japan. Meanwhile, a group of college students are getting ready to head for a long weekend at a lakeside cabin that Kurt's cousin owns. We learn that the lab coats are watching the group of friends as they get ready for spring break. The group is close to the cabin when they stop for gas and directions. The attendant, Mordecai, tells them that they will have no problem getting to the cabin. It's the getting back they should be worried about.
Mordecai, baby, what's happening? How's the weather up top?
The lambs have passed through the gate.
They are come to the killing floor.
Well, you're doing a great job out there.
By the numbers, man, you gotta start it off just right. So we'll talk to you later, okay?
Their blind eyes see nothing of the horrors to come. Their ears are stopped.
They are the gods' fools.
Well, that's how it works.
Cleanse them. Cleanse the world of their ignorance and sin. Bathe them in the crimson of... Am I on speakerphone?
At the cabin, Holden is in his room getting ready to swim in the lake when he notices a gruesome, gory painting on the wall and takes it down. He discovered that underneath the painting is a two-way mirror into the next room where Dana is staying. All the people at the facility have gathered to place their bets on what fate the group in the cabin will choose. The students are drinking and start to play a game of truth or dare. Jules is dared to make out with the wolf head mounted on the wall. Then it's Dana's turn. She chooses dare when the door to the basement flies open, startling them all. They dare her to go down into the basement. There is a ton of really strange stuff down there. Dana has been reading a diary and calls everyone over to hear what she's found. The diary belonged to a young girl who was brutally beaten by her father. There's something about how they will all return once someone reads some Latin words at the end of the diary. Marty says they shouldn't read it. Against the advice of Marty, Dana reads the Latin, and somewhere outside, the zombie hillbilly family crawls out of the ground.
I'm drawing a line in the fucking sand here. Do not read the Latin.
Read it.
What the fuck?
Dolor.
No.
Stop being a fucking baby.
Kurt.
It's a diary.
It doesn't even mean anything.
Dana.
Dolor supervivo Carl. Dolor supplimus Carl. Dolor igneo animus.
When they go upstairs, Jules and Kurt are acting out of character. Marty notices this, but his concerns are brushed off by the others. Kurt and Jules decide to go for a walk. Thanks to some pheromone fog, they start to have sex in the woods, but they are stopped by the zombies. Hadley pulls a lever and blood runs into a grooved stone tablet that contains the outline of a female figure, the whore. Kurt runs into Marty outside and tells everyone that Jules is dead. They decide to barricade the house and stick together. But the people at the facility have ways of manipulating the situation, and the group splits up.
We'll go room by room, barricade every window and door. We gotta play it safe. No matter what happens, we have to stay together. This isn't right.
What? What's the matter?
This isn't right. We should split up.
Marty is attacked through a window and blood runs into the outline of the reveler. Dana and Holden fight off zombies in the basement. It appears that this is the room where the father beat and tortured the girl from the diary. Kurt runs into Dana and Holden and they attempt to escape in the RV. The RV makes its way halfway through the tunnel when it starts to cave in. Kurt has a dirt bike in the back of the RV and he decides to jump the ravine and go get help, but he hits the invisible barrier and falls to his death. Blood runs into the outline of the jock. Dana and Holden are heading back to the cabin when Holden is stabbed through the head. Blood fills the outline of the scholar and the RV crashes into the lake.
Good, okay, because I need you calm. Okay, no matter what happens, you gotta stay calm.
Dana makes it onto the pier when the zombie comes up from the water and starts beating the crap out of her. Back at the facility, they are celebrating a successful night. Evidently, the virgin doesn't have to die for the plan to be successful. This is extremely important since all of the other sites have failed to complete the ritual.
Fuck you! Fuck you! Fuck you! Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you.
The red phone rings. Hadley answers and learns that one of the others is still alive. Marty comes out of nowhere and beats the zombie with his giant bong until he falls in the water. Through the zombie's grave, they fall into a trap room. The glass window in the elevator shows them many other elevators that contain supernatural creatures connected to the strange items in the basement of the cabin. Meanwhile, the observers are in an uproar because Dana and Marty have penetrated their facility. They make plans to kill Marty in order to preserve the intended order of sacrificial death. While in the facility, Dana pushes a large button that says, "Purge System." And suddenly, alarms start going off all over the facility. The guards all pause in terror. Then, all of the elevators open while monster after monster emerges. Marty and Dana end up in the room with all the character outlines. Dana realizes that there are 5 stone tablets, one for each of them. Dana, Marty, Holden, Kurt, and Jules. Everything that happened to them had been part of a ritual sacrifice. The director explains that the ritual is meant to keep the old gods dormant, and they must follow specific rules. If the sacrifice is not complete, the old gods will come to the surface and destroy mankind. They run out of time for the sacrifice, and the ground shakes and cracks open.
Giant evil gods.
I wish I could have seen it.
I know. That would have been a fun weekend.
Now it's time to talk horror, and my guest today is Sarah. She is part of the Conduit family. Is there anything you would like to tell the audience?
Well, first of all, hello. Nice to be here. I'm Sarah Michelle, special effects and traditional makeup artist. I own the oddity shop Butchered Waifu Oddities, and I co-own the Florida's Market of the Beast. Held at Conduit.
Yeah, you do a lot. When is the next Market of the Beast?
So the next one is going to be on March 23rd from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Again, held at the Conduit. We have over 20 alternative small businesses, from oddity makers to underground music sellers and some really cool, like, small clothing brand businesses.
It's a really good market, I think. I mean, we had the first one was in, what, December?
It was December 15th, yes.
Yeah, and so this will be like a semi-annual market. So,
yeah, our goal is to have this one be more of a quarterly event. We want to be able to have a safe and open-minded space for smaller alternative shop owners. And really bring out the dark end of markets.
Yes.
But I'm very fortunate to be a part of this event and be somewhat of a business owner and be able to connect with shop owners in this way and be able to meet new people. So it's been really fun so far.
Yeah. So today we are talking about Cabin in the Woods. This movie is like it's a horror comedy, and there are a lot of horror tropes and just like meta commentary on horror movies in general, like the whiteboard when the group goes into the cellar and they're trying to see, like, they put bets on who is going, like, what's going to be picked out, like, choose your demise type thing.
Yeah, who's going to pick what and how are they going to die?
Yeah. Really, like, there's so many different horror movies that are depicted there. It's kind of crazy the amount of stuff that they, like, crammed into this film.
It was very much saturated with different cameos all throughout, which makes it so entertaining to watch. You know, you're watching it with friends and you're, like, pointing at the TV like, oh my god, that's Hellraiser. That's Pinhead right there.
Yeah, the guy with the blades coming out of his head, and there was, like, a puzzle box that... Yeah. Which character was it? It was the, like, the jock. He's the one who had it.
Yeah.
And the jock is played by, what's his name?
Chris Hemsworth, yeah.
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 Yeah. I was just going to call him Thor. They have references to, like, The Hills Have Eyes with the camper that they use. Like, I looked up all the references in the movie, and it was pages long. Yeah. There was so much. Do you remember any of the people that were, like, on the list, on the board?
It's been a while since I've seen this movie, to be completely honest with you. The only one that really sticks out in my head right now is that mermaid creature.
Yeah, the merman that they really wanted. And then he comes back at the end of the movie.
And it's just a full circle. You know, it's what you wanted and how you're going to die.
Yeah, there's a lot of foreshadowing there.
Oh, yeah.
So on the whiteboard for the potential, there's, like, deadites as well as angry molesting tree are listed. And those are references to the Evil Dead.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to think what the angry molesting tree would be from, but no, that makes sense.
Yeah, it is really comical. And then they actually had one person or one, like, villain just listed as Kevin. There's just, like, the name Kevin on the board.
Was it ever shown on film what Kevin is? Because I have an idea what Kevin might be.
So they never explain it on the film, but I was able to find, like, what Kevin was supposed to be.
Yeah.
What do you think Kevin is?
I just rewatched Sin City, and the cannibal that was played by Elijah Wood's name is Kevin. I want to say, like, I'm like 90% sure.
You know what? They do mention that in one of the facts about something about Sin City. I guess they said that Kevin was meant to be a sweet looking guy who seemed like he might work at Best Buy until he dismembers people.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it's just Kevin, you know, he's just over there dismembering bodies. So they had werewolves. Aliens. Well, they have, like, everything.
Wasn't there, like, a zombie family also on that list, too? And they ended up showing up anyway.
Yeah, they picked the zombie family because she was reading from the diary, and she said, like, the...
It's Latin.
Latin, yes. Yeah, oh, my God, thank you.
It's just specifically a string of Latin phrases that summon the butcher family as zombies.
So... You know, we've got our butcher zombie family that the dad, like, tortured the daughter in the cellar. It's pretty messed up. I think they call them, like, the hillbilly zombies or something.
I think so.
Oh, I have it here. They're the zombie redneck torture family.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there was a discrepancy between, like, when they placed the bets. One, like, a different worker was like, oh, but I placed a bet on zombie. And he's like, but you see here, this is zombie, and this is zombie redneck torture family. They're very different. Very different. What else were there? There were clowns. The clown was great. whenever he's like killing them, and it just, he kind of looks like the It clown, but it's just like a ripoff. There were witches, sexy witches.
See, there's another differentiator. You gotta have the witches or sexy witches.
Yeah, it can't, it's not like the witch with like the like boil on her face.
Oh yeah, no green skin, big nose, mole. You either get that or you get like the craft witches, you know.
I would pick the sexy witches to kill me.
Oh, absolutely. A show and murder? Sign me up.
So there were demons, a hell lord, a giant snake. I remember that giant snake.
Yeah.
There was a mummy, the bride. So I'm sure that was like the Bride of Frankenstein. The scarecrow folk. There was a snowman, which I'm sure was a reference to, what is it, Jack?
Jack Frost.
There was also a dragon bat, vampires, dismembered goblins, sugar plum fairy, Sasquatch or Yeti, killer dolls. No, you can't not have killer dolls. Some twins. I'm sure that was a reference to The Shining.
Absolutely.
There was a giant. There was a jack-o'-lantern. And some killer doctors, too.
Killer doctors. Now, are they going to be categorized by specialty? Or... like, is a child's physician going to stab me? Or is a dentist going to behead me? Like, I need to know these details.
Yeah. When I think of the doctor in a horror movie, I think of the movie The Dentist.
Yes. I was just about to say.
I can't really think of too many other doctor horror movies. I mean, I don't know if... I'll say a dentist is a doctor. It won't be offensive to the doctors out there, the dentists out there.
You could argue Hannibal Lecter, but like a type of doctor who was a psychiatrist, yeah?
Oh, true. Yeah.
Dr. Lecter. So it could be a slight reference to that.
True. Yeah, that's a good one. It's a good connection. They also had some additional monsters like a tarantula, werewolves, large frogs, a giant centipede. Yeah. For some reason, there was an obese man, just like an obese man. I don't know. That is so mean. And there's a giant woman, like just a giant woman.
You know, some people really like giant women, I gotta say.
You could call it a meat mountain, even if it's a woman. I like a giant woman. there were also like blob-like creatures, a killer robot, and a trio of KKK members, which is probably my favorite fact that they put in the villains, KKK members.
What an oddball. It just reminds me of Django Unchained, where they're all coming down the hill and they can't see through their hoods and they're all like running into each other.
They are dumbasses. So the whole like failed rituals that were happening all over the world. So it was like, what? There was one in Japan. There was one they had said... one somewhere else, maybe it was Canada, I don't know, but it had failed too, and they were relying on Japan, I think. Says, okay, so the Kyoto ritual that you see in the, like, with the school, all the kids, it was supposed to be a reference to the ring.
They sang a ritual song that transforms Kiko, Japanese floaty girl, into a frog. They say in Japanese, the demon is defeated. Now Kiko's spirit will live in the happy frog.
I remember that about, like, the happy frog.
Yeah. Let me see. Someone asks, do the Japanese not follow the same guidelines for who dies, or jock, scholar, virgin, fool? It seems unlikely that all of those would be found in a class of 9-year-old Japanese girls.
Yeah. I think it was based on culture, which is actually something that I'm going to get into as one of the themes, because depending on where the ritual was taking place, it was very much based on their culture of who was going to get killed. Mm-hmm. So, like, school children in Japan were the target, but very, like, the very American stereotypes of, like, the whore and the jock and all that stuff, like, that's, you know, that was the American one. And I think, I'm trying to see, oh, okay, the Madrid ritual appears to reference Dracula. So in Madrid, mm-hmm. it was Dracula that I'm sure had to kill someone. And it probably wasn't the same group of people either. It was probably like a village or something. And then there's the Stockholm ritual was a reference to John Carpenter's The Thing. So I'm sure that was like, you have to kill everyone in the laboratory. So it was very much based on wherever, you know, the demographics of where it was.
It would make sense for the region you're targeting. Like, you go to Japan and you're like, okay, you're falling under these American stereotypes. They're not going to know what to do. So it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it mentions that the American facility has only failed to complete its ritual once. And then it says it was like in 1998 due to a screw up by the chem department. And I guess that's a reference to the movie The Faculty.
Oh, I have not seen that one.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
Like the five characters, there's basically a group like this in the faculty as well. But there was basically in that group, there was also the jock, the scholar, the whore, the fool, and the virgin. Elijah Wood, I guess, was the virgin in that movie.
Elijah Wood makes another appearance.
Yes. With them defeating the monster with a handmade. Oh, it was an amphetamine narcotic from the chem department. I don't remember that. I have to rewatch that movie.
Yeah, I feel like it's a small detail that everyone misses every watch. I definitely don't remember this.
Well, it was like they were slugs or something, right? They were being taken over by these like slug aliens that would control their brain. And so I think they had to come up with, I remember them having to come up with some kind of lab experiment that would vanquish it. If you look really closely, so one thing, like the amount of monsters that they had in this film is insane. And when they get into that box, that like a capsule,
They're trapped in.
Yeah. And it's like moving all around and it shows you like the view from the outside. And it's like all these monsters are trapped.
Yeah.
In these boxes. Yeah. And it's almost like a.
It reminded me of Cube.
Oh, Cube.
Because like how. If I remember, some of them would like move.
Yes.
Yeah. So I was thinking, you know, Cube, all of these people are trapped in these square jails.
Definitely. I think that it kind of emulates the Cube layout. Mm-hmm. But in Cube, correct me if I'm wrong, in that movie, it was just a bunch of booby traps.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you had a handful of prisoners in different rooms in this giant cube. Mm-hmm. And you have to figure out which rooms are safe, which ones are booby trapped, where is the bridge to escape, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. But no, just in the cube rooms, it totally brought me back to that movie.
Yeah. Well, the glass panel reminded me of, I think it's like Ghost. It's like a Ghost Castle movie.
13 Ghosts?
Yes. Thank you. Yes. 13 Ghosts.
Yeah.
Because you can see them all in display, but they can't get out. So it reminded me of that.
That is so true. Yeah. No, that's a good reference, actually. Better than mine.
No, they're both good. They're both good. It's a combination of the two.
Yeah.
There's a flying purple people eater, which is the song. Like, you know, the flying purple people eater. No, 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 no. I listened to that song for like Halloween.
Do you see that at the end of the movie? I feel like there is a creature that like eats someone's face.
It's when all the monsters are released. So when she, when the one character, she hits the big button.
Yeah.
That when she hits that emergency button, she releases all of the monsters. And that's when the flying purple people eater comes out. That is such a crazy scene when all the monsters just like come out and start killing the people, and they don't kill each other. They're not attacking each other. They're only attacking the people.
They are conscious. They know that they were held prisoner.
Yeah. They've been side by side in those cubes, like moving across. They've seen each other. They're like waiting for this revenge. So another theme in this movie is ritualistic sacrifice, which is like the core of the movie. That's like what it's all revolving around. Like you have to sacrifice for the old gods. Like it has to be done a certain way to appease them. And like they're very powerful entities. The horror they experience is not random, but part of a predetermined plan. But so if it's like predetermined and everyone failed across the board, all over the world, does that mean that the gods wanted them to fail?
Ooh, that's a good question. It almost goes into like the whole, oh, well, God has a plan for me, but I'm suffering. God wants me to suffer. Like that kind of religious question. I haven't actually thought about that in this movie, you know. You got me stumped on that. it's going to raise a whole discussion on the whole, well, if they wanted...
Free will,
It's like, well, if everything was predetermined and then everyone fails, then, you know, is that what they wanted? They wanted everyone to fail and everyone dies, like... That's probably just the answer. It's what they wanted.
I really think they wanted it to fail. I think they were like, fuck this. We need a restart. I'm sick of watching these people. Like, it almost like it was a TV show for them. And then at some point, they're just bored of it. And yeah, I mean, especially with these kinds of gods, like, they don't give a shit about the people that are on the planet. Like, you're just game pieces to them. You're entertainment. It's a really interesting way to look at gods as well, because the gods are not like your friends. Like, they fear them. They're afraid that they're going to come rise up and just destroy humanity. Like, the gods that they are appeasing are not these loving, I'm your savior. It's, no, I'm going to make this sacrifice to appease you.
Yeah, I'm going to make the sacrifice because I'm scared that you're going to come up and kill everybody. It's to keep you at bay.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yeah, at any point, they could just be like, well, I'm bored of your sacrifices. Let me wipe the plate clean and then start over.
Yeah.
Which, again, could be turned into a religious context.
Maybe. Is there a time when that happened in the Bible? I don't know.
The
flood. Yeah. No, I'm joking. When I was pretending like I don't know, I'm joking. It was a little bit. The societal expectations and archetypes that they use, too, are, I mean... we kind of already talked about this. Like, it's very based on the culture and the, like, the ethnicity of wherever, you know, it's happening in the world. We've got our archetypes, like the virgin, the athlete, the scholar, the fool, and the whore, which definitely that whole archetype started in the 90s.
Yeah.
In horror movies or just like rom-coms in general. In my notes, it just reflecting how society often categorizes and expects people to behave. The film suggests that these stereotypes are not just fictional, but also part of a system that demands their suffering. So it's like we've got these stones with these archetypes. It's not just that you're this stereotype and it's just like made up. It's like, no, like you are this and you embody this. And now you have to die because of it.
Too bad. Yeah.
Okay, so I have a little game for you.
Games?
Games. I always have a little game. And when you, in this game, you have to pick people who are from Conduit.
Oh my God.
Conduit family.
Y'all are going to get so mad.
Oh my God, no. It's okay, you guys. It's okay. This is just a game. Don't take it seriously. All right, so we've got the whore, the jock, the nerd, the slacker, and the virgin. There are no virgins at Conduit. So let's say the innocent one, okay?
Well, hold on. I need to have a visual of this list because I'm going to start forgetting who I'm naming. So we have the slut, jock.
Nerd,
innocent.
Is that it? And then the like the slacker.
Oh, slacker.
Or the fool.
A fool. Okay, yeah.
So let's start with the whore. Who would you? Who would be sacrificed as the whore from Conduit?
all love to her. She's great. I think she is a wonderful person. She's a little cutie patootie. I'd love to see her there every time she's working, but I'm going to say Tamika.
Yes, I also had Tamika on here as the whore. I'm sorry, Tamika.
I mean, all due respect, she has her fun, and I definitely give her props to that. I love hearing her stories. I wish I have her confidence. I mean, I might be added to that list, but no, she's really fun. I really enjoy her presence. Mm-hmm. I will put her in that category.
I think she would also put herself in that category. So like, I think we're safe there. Okay. So the jock, who would the jock be?
As far as someone who is fit, outgoing, athletic, I'm going to say that's Ryan.
Oh my God, I put Ryan too.
we know our people.
Yeah. So Ryan works security and he's extremely buff. He works out like every day.
Yeah, he looks like he is a stereotypical like surfer dude. He's at the very like long, wavy hair. He's really tall, and he was in a branch of the military. I can't remember which one it was, but I mean, he's fit, he goes outside, he loves to do outdoor activities, so no, he fits that category pretty well.
Yeah, no, he's definitely our jock of Conduit. Okay, the nerd.
let me think. Because I'm trying to think of, like, everyone there. Like, our bartender, security.
Door people.
Yeah. There are quite a few people I would put under nerd. I mean, Pete is very knowledgeable. Seems like every time I talk to him, he's, like, schooling me on something.
Yeah.
Anthony's pretty knowledgeable, too. He has an answer for everything. I rarely hear him say, I don't know. So, I think I might just say Pete.
Pete?
It might be because he's older.
Yeah. My husband, Pete, the owner, could be the nerd. I agree. I mean, he's got his PhD in philosophy. That's, like, really fucking nerdy.
Yeah.
I put Rob as the nerd.
I guess. I mean, I feel like everyone has their own branch of nerdiness.
Or even Vika. Vika could definitely be the nerd.
It could, yeah. I mean, like I said, I think a lot of people fit under this category.
Yeah, we have a lot of fucking nerds.
Yeah.
At the Conduit.
The whole Conduit team are nerds.
Yeah, we'd all just die of being, we'd be the archetype for nerd. Okay, so the slacker or the fool, who would you say?
My darling dear. My darling dear Anthony.
Aw, your baby. Your love.
My sweetheart. He is not a fool as in he slacks or doesn't do what he's supposed to. He is the fool as in he's silly, he's goofy, he likes to joke and play around. And I will say, he does his job real good. He is the best security guy we have at the Conduit. Mm-hmm. And I say that not just because he is my lover.
Yeah.
But, like, every time he works there, he's so kind. He treats everyone with respect, says hi and goodbye to everybody that shows up. Like,
yeah.
He is the best, but he is a giant goof.
He is a giant goof.
A silly man that will dance his heart away. So
yeah. He's just very fun-loving.
He knows how to have a good time.
Yeah. So I was thinking for the fool, I also had Anthony on there on the list, but I was also thinking Scotto.
Scotto.
Sorry, Scotto.
No.
I think I would choose Scotto over Anthony.
Well, it's the same type of fool. You know, they're silly, they like to laugh, they like to make others laugh. So I don't think anyone in that establishment is, like, lazy or doesn't do what they're supposed to do. I think
the fool is more like, to me, the stoner.
Yeah, well, I mean, if it's a stoner, then it is Anthony. But yeah, just like the really relaxed, you know, Shaggy from Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
But if we're gonna be talking about the innocent stereotype,
mm-hmm.
The Conduit is innocent.
Yeah, it's a hard one.
I don't think there is one, unless we want to put you down.
Could I be the innocent one?
Yes.
I'm not innocent.
I mean, if I am at Conduit after everyone leaves and we're having our time at the bar and I'm saying something raunchy, no one there is like, I don't know what you mean, or they're like blushing, or,
oh my God.
Everyone there is just like, haha, penis balls. You know, I can't see anyone falling under this innocent stereotype.
I said Casey.
I mean, I have not interacted very much with Casey, so I do not have a say.
Pete didn't agree when I was going through this list. He's like, she's not innocent. But I'm like, she's a ballerina.
Aww.
Like, she's definitely very innocent. Like, she definitely, like, let's go back 3 years, and she would have definitely been this archetype.
That's adorable.
So, she's like a pixie hair stylist ballerina.
She's a cutie patootie, let me tell ya.
She's very cute.
I just have not talked to her that much to say what archetype she falls under.
Yeah. I would agree it would be either her or, I mean, when it comes to, like, definitely talking about, like, certain terms or something, I am so ignorant when it comes to that. So I'd be like, what are you talking about? Like, what does that mean? It's definitely, but I'm not innocent by any means.
No one is.
No one is at Conduit. I think there is like a certain element in this movie when it comes to free will versus, you know, being manipulated, because they can manipulate them, but they can't take away their choice.
Yeah.
Which it's like, do you really have a choice if you're being manipulated?
It is very hard, because you would have to know what the manipulation is and like see the signs of in order to be like, okay, I see what's happening and I'm gonna do something else. I'm gonna walk away, whatever.
Yeah.
Because like towards the beginning of the movie, they had like all the bells and whistles to the cabin. Where it's like, what, they have fog, or like they play music or something, and then they open the trap door and they go into the cellar. Like, if a door opens by itself so suddenly and I'm in a cabin all by myself, I'm dipping the fuck out of there.
What? Yeah, you don't go in that door.
I'm not going into an attic. I'm not going into a basement. Like, fuck that.
And they had already, I don't know if you caught it, but they had already been like lacing their products, and so that they would be like more susceptible and like more agreeable.
Yeah, because they had the mist in the woods to make them horny or something.
Yeah, like, they're like, release the pheromones. But then they also they made it lighter because she was like, oh, it's too dark. Like,
oh yeah, they had like a little spotlight in the meadow or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing you can do if you're being drugged. But I don't know. If conveniently I see a spotlight in the woods and it's dark out, that's a little suspicious.
That's a sign that you should be getting it on.
Like there.
I guess like when it came to the like the fool character, they apparently like laced his marijuana. They either missed like part of his stash, and so he didn't have like whatever drugs they were using to get them to be amenable, or he smoked so much, like he built up a tolerance.
Yeah, I was gonna
to
say,
it.
If you're smoking weed that much and that often, you have a high tolerance.
Yeah. They also like kept just whispering to them, almost like a subliminal message.
Yes, I think so.
They kept like, you would hear like little words like go outside, or the only one that was actually hearing it was the guy that was playing the loner. He was the only one. He'd be like, did you guys hear that? And everyone just brushed him off like he was just high. But it was really easy to brush him off because he was like the stoner kind
of. You're like, oh, he's high. Cool. Hearing things. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, we can't take him seriously. Like, even in the beginning of the movie, he's like smoking weed as he comes to them in the car, and he has like this bong, which was a very cool bong. So it was like also a coffee mug.
Yeah.
I want that.
We have to find it.
Apparently, that thing cost like $5,000 to make.
I believe it.
Basically, in this movie, like we had kind of talked about before, nothing worked. Everyone failed. The world is destroyed. And like, even though, so the like virgin, the actress that plays the virgin, she does like contemplate killing her friend. Like, she has the gun in her hand and they're trying to convince her. They're like letting her know, like saying, you know, this is the reason why we're doing this, is because if you don't, like, the world's going to end. Like, we have to do this. And then she doesn't. She gets attacked by the wolf, the werewolf.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason why she doesn't kill him. Then they all died anyway.
Yeah. What a great ending. Everyone dies.
Everyone. The whole world.
Yeah. What a way to go.
Yeah.
Just the old gods come and kill everybody. Love it.
Would you kill your friend if you were told
that the entire world was going to end if that person survived. It was on that person's survival. Like, it could be that one person, or it could be billions of people dead.
Damn. I mean, depends on which friend. I don't know.
Well, okay, so we've got the fool in this one, and Anthony is our fool.
No!
So...
Oh, man. I don't know if I can bring myself to kill someone.
Some characters in the movie, they're, they realize why the ritual's happening, but they're like, but should we still, like, should we be doing this? Like, should we just let it all end? And that actually gets brought up, like, a few times during the film, especially in the beginning with the, like, the new guy, and he's looking at the board, and he's like, this is fucked up.
Yeah.
And then later on, he comes in again, and it's like the same type of thing. And then at the end of the movie, they're like, well, I mean, they're like very explicit. They're like, should we even like, do we even want to keep going on? Like, if this is, you know, the reality, like, should we just let it all end? Like, why are we?
It's almost like they're just pushing back the inevitable.
Destroy humanity now or
later. I want to make the decision. I'm going to make the next generation decide if I would be able to, like, broadcast a, hey, you're going to die in 10 minutes. Then I think we'd all live our lives to the fullest in those 10 minutes. At least give everyone that opportunity. But I don't know.
I don't know if people would be living their life to the fullest in those 10 minutes. I think they'd be screaming for 10 full minutes, panicking, running around.
You are not seizing the opportunity.
Then you can tell them you're like the god that's like, I gave you 10 minutes and you wasted it.
I gave you 10 full minutes and all you did was cry.
That's some fucked up god stuff.
That's me.
If it's my favorite person in the entire world, the one that I love the most, and like it would literally kill me to not have them, like, well, maybe I do a murder-suicide, and then I'd be like, okay, I save the rest of humanity, but, like, I don't have to keep living if this person has to die. Self-sacrifice. Yeah. Here's a really interesting fact, that the facility was actually inspired by the director. He grew up in Los Alamos, New Mexico, where it was, like, a bunch of scientists and stuff in a laboratory where there were, like, nuclear weapons being built.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of like what inspired that laboratory. And he talks about this in his like special features portion. I think that's an interesting connection between like, okay, this facility and they're, you know, they're making nuclear weapons that will destroy the world. You're playing God.
Yeah.
And it's a ticking time bomb.
That's a good parallel. No, that's a good little full circle moment.
Well, I think we pretty much discussed all there is, like, the depth that this movie has to it. Thank you for talking to me about it. I think we had I had a lot of fun talking to you.
Thank you for having me. As taking my podcast virginity, this has been so much fun.
Nice. And if you work at Conduit, please don't be offended by anything we said. it is just a joke. Well, all right. I guess that's it for today. And we'll be hanging out later at a show.
Yes, we will.
How can you wager on this when you control the outcome?
Well, we just get them in the cellar. They take it from there.
No, they have to make the choice of their own free will. Otherwise, the system doesn't work. It's like the Harbinger. It's this creepy old fuck. Practically wears a sign, you will die. Why do we put him there? The system. They have to choose to ignore him, and they have to choose what happens in the cellar. Yeah, we rig the game as much as we need to, but in the end, they don't transgress.
They can't be punished. So what's it gonna be, Truman, you in? Windows closing.
Now it's time for the true horrors of it all. Much of Drew Goddard's inspiration for this movie came from his own upbringing in Los Alamos, New Mexico. A place filled with scientists and co-workers all going about their business and living seemingly routine and ordinary lives, even though they were building nuclear weapons that could potentially, you know, destroy the entire world. He talks about this in his DVD special features interview and commentary. So, you know, humankind playing God is nothing new. We're like the worst thing that ever happened on the face of the earth. But, you know, we're here. We've got our time, you know, that we're going to be here on this planet. Eventually, the planet will be no more, which is part of the theme of this whole movie. Cabin in the Woods, playing God. We've got gods. We've got the end of the world, you know. I don't think it's happening in my time. I don't think I'll see it, but who knows? We definitely have enough nuclear weapons in the world to blow up mankind, at least. The Earth will still be here, but we'll be gone. So the true horror connection is the Manhattan Project Trinity Test. On July 16th, 1945, J. Robert Oppenheimer and the Manhattan Project scientists detonated an atomic bomb for the first time ever at the Trinity test site in New Mexico. The explosion took place more than 200 miles away from the Los Alamos laboratory where they built the weapon. But the testing site, located in the Tularosa Basin, was not an isolated area. Nearly 500,000 people, many of them were Nuevo Mexicanos and Native Americans, lived within a 150-mile radius of the detonation, some only 12 miles away. Real not good. Bad stuff. These people and others downwind of the blast became the first victims of the nuclear fallout. Many of them heard and physically felt it, the Trinity explosion, around 5:30 that morning, and saw the bright blast it created in the sky. Some had direct contact with the fallout material. One witness at a summer camp in Ruidosa, New Mexico, later told Vice that she and other girls played in falling white debris like it was snow. Catching it on their tongues and rubbing it in their faces. Oh my God, so cute. Nuclear waste, so much fun to play in. Others came into contact with the fallout through their environment as the radioactive debris infected the surrounding water, crops, livestock, and land. The U.S. government, keen on avoiding panic and maintaining the project's high level of wartime secrecy, told Tularosa Basin residents that the blast they'd seen was simply an accidental explosion of ammunition and pyrotechnics. Don't worry, you guys. It was just, we had some machines, they exploded. You don't have to worry about any of that. It's okay. We have it all under control. Officials chose not to evacuate the area, nor to warn residents of the potential health effects. Even after the U.S. dropped atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki a few weeks later, killing an estimated 110,000 to 210,000 people, and effectively ending the war, the government officials still failed to inform Tularosa Basin residents about the potential effects of the blast. When asked directly about the detonation health risk, they denied any potential hazard. It's okay, you guys, just go drink that water. Oh, you see that pile of ash over there? That's a really good place for your kids to make a sandbox. You should just turn that into a sandbox over there. You guys are fine. You're fine. Nothing's wrong. Don't worry. You're not going to get sick or anything like that. Don't worry. No. No, you're fine. No. Yep. That's safe. That's safe for you over there. One of the most immediate health impacts of the Trinity test was a spike in infant deaths. In 1947, an alarmed healthcare provider in Roswell named Catherine S. Benke, hope I said that right, wrote to Stafford Warren,
who was responsible for radiation safety during the Manhattan Project, to ask him if these deaths had any connection to the Trinity dust. As I recall, in August 1945, the month after the first bomb was tested in New Mexico, there were about 35 infant deaths here, Benke wrote in a letter to Warren. According to the bulletin of the atomic scientists, I understand the rate at Alamogordo nearer the site of the test was even higher than Roswell. At the time, scientists understood that exposure to nuclear radiation could lead to tumors, cancer, and other negative health effects. You know, the things that they shouldn't be worried about. In fact, 5 days after the Trinity test, Warren had told Manhattan Project leader General Leslie Groves that the nuclear fallout from the test represented a very serious hazard. Over a 2,700 square mile area downwind of the Trinity site. Despite Warren's knowledge that the fallout represented a huge health risk, his assistant wrote back to Benke that he hadn't heard about an increase in infant mortality, but in any case, wanted to assure you that the safety and health of the people at large is not in any way endangered. Over the next several decades, people who lived through the blast began to develop cancer, disease, and other health problems. People born after the blast developed these problems too. This occurred not only because the radioactive fallout from Trinity stuck around in the environment. Other factors included local uranium mining. Uranium is a key component of the A-bomb's construction. And migrating fallout from the nuclear tests in Nevada starting in the 1950s. People who lived near Trinity and other nuclear test sites began to identify themselves as downwinders and made connections between their communities' health problems and the government's nuclear deaths. In 1990, the United States passed a Radiation Exposure Compensation Act to provide money to some downwinders of the Nevada test site near Las Vegas. However, the act doesn't provide any compensation or apology to the downwinders of the Trinity test site. In 2005, Tina Cordova co-founded the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Consortium to draw attention to the region's radiation exposure and demand government action. The organization promotes amendments to the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act that would include New Mexico downwinders and other people with nuclear radiation exposure. It only seems like the right thing to do after all the wrong that was done to those people. So, really, The Cabin in the Woods is just a parody of a nuclear blast. Bunch of lab coats deciding who lives and who dies. Nothing new here. With that, let's end on a high note. If you would like to collaborate on something, I would love the opportunity to connect with more people in the horror scene. I'm currently scheduling guests on my episode for June, and you don't have to be an expert to talk horror with me. I will say that I am trying to prioritize my health, so I am pulling away from some of the side projects I've done recently. As an independent podcast and doing everything on my own, like social media, all the reels I create, I try to gain a following, so if I followed you recently and then sent you a message, if you followed me back, this is me like kind of knocking on the door and saying, hey, I'm here. I'm an independent podcaster and check out what I do because I think it's pretty cool. I enjoy doing this and I hope you enjoy what I do. If you recently got to me through that way, thank you so much for actually like following through and not thinking I'm a fucking creep and blocking me. I appreciate it a lot.
I recently got my blood work back, and this queen needs to take care of herself so I can live a long and active lifestyle. I'm kind of telling you all this as an accountability thing. I'm giving myself 6 months to lose like 30 pounds. That means not being sucked into editing for hours on end without moving from my chair. My husband has been extremely helpful as we prepare meals at home and make time to be active every day. I left teaching because of the stress of it, and it hasn't even been a full year since I've left teaching yet. But the stress of being an elementary school teacher in Florida was enough to make me eat several cupcakes a day. There is always junk food around if you teach primary education. And in the 4 years I worked in public education, I gained easily 10 pounds each year, if not more. Once it's packed on, it's very hard to take it off. At 37, I'm focused on taking care of myself and getting back to a healthy weight and active lifestyle that I've always enjoyed. If anyone wants to promote me for some weight loss program, I'm always happy to use your products and workout regimen for free and show off my results. Shoutouts for this week are from social media. My friend Matthew, who was on one of my first episodes, said 2001 Maniacs was filmed in St. Cloud. This was in response to last week's episode. Thanks for sharing that information. I did not know that, and I'm not surprised at all. I also posted a video on International Women's Day of my new Death Proof tattoo. I love the female characters in Death Proof and the way they make Stump and Mike pay for his sins against women. Lorraine in Black said, I'm in love with your tattoo. Happy Women's Day. Happy Women's Day to you too. Happy Women's Month. Happy Women's everything. Let's make history again, because that's what women do. This month, I'm covering spring break horror movies. If you have a movie suggestion that could fit into the category, you can email those to me at screamqueenpodcaster@gmail.com. And I will share your suggestions. My Scream Trivia Horror event just happened this Tuesday, and it was awesome. There's so many people showed up. We ran out of chairs, like literally ran out of chairs. It was so packed. So thank you to everyone that showed up. I really hope that you enjoyed it. And I hope that you're listening. I hope if you came to my event, I have fucking QR codes everywhere, and I've really like worked on this whole like horror trivia thing, trying to make it better and improve it as I go, because this is something I am creating from scratch as well as this podcast. So my trivia nights are going to be based on franchises from now on. For April, I'll be covering all the Nightmare on Elm Street movies that will take place on April 15th. This is a weekly podcast with new episodes out every Thursday. All research, writing, and audio is done by yours truly. This is a one-woman show, and I'm doing my very best. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen. It really means a lot. You can find me on Instagram at Scream Queen Podcaster, Blue Sky at Scream Queen Podcast, TikTok at Scream Queen Podcast, and there is a link tree that will take you to all my YouTube and Facebook page as well. As a last word of advice, if a cellar door pops open, don't go in. Don't do it. If you see words in Latin, don't read them. Nope. If there's a puzzle box, don't solve it. Nope. Nope. All bad ideas. Until next time, goodbye.